Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West. Episode 40. I am one of your hosts, Nat.
And Pat.
And Cat in Hat.
Yay.
We hit middle age.
Yeah, we're officially going through a midlife crisis now.
And what we do during the midlife crisis, we talk about DC movie news, and then we talk about huge events. Are they ruining comics? But first, let's go to the top of the stack. Patrick, you want to start us out with the top of the stack today?
Yeah. So, top of the stack here, let's see if I can get to the creative team's page. I should have been more prepared. Anyway, you caught me off guard, Matt.
I'm sorry.
So, I got Black Panther versus Deadpool, issue number 4. This is written by Daniel Kibblesmith with art by Ricardo Lopez Ortiz. This book is hilarious. If you want a Deadpool book, this is, like, the perfect book for you. Not to mention, if you want a Black Panther book, this is a pretty good book as well. Lopez Ortiz's art is just absolutely gorgeous in this. It's so dynamic. I've talked a little bit on the show about it before, but he just has such incredible line work. His design for Black Panther's suit is really interesting. I'm definitely sounding like Nat here.
There's an element of like the Brian Stelfreeze's first run of Black Panther that's in that that art style. So
I had to take a picture of it and send it to a friend of mine, but there's a panel in here where Ta-Nehisi Coates is made canon in the Marvel universe. He's the writer for the Black Panther series proper, and Deadpool just says to him, like, oh, yeah, I forgot. We discussed that in the Ta-Nehisi Coates run, didn't we? And he's like, oh, I'm a big fan of Mr. Coates' work. And Deadpool's like, oh, you got that? I thought that was just a fourth wall throw. And he's like, I don't know what that means, but me and Mr. Coates talk regularly about the American psyche.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then also just the last cool thing in here, we get what is it? The Dead Panther or Blackpool?
Pantherpool?
Pantherpool, yeah. Basically, he finds Black Panther art.
I'm or nine.
Armor. Yeah, the pee-pee.
I feel like now that actually has to be the right one. That's what they go with.
Pantherpool.
It's pee-pee.
Nice.
You're welcome, everyone.
take it away.
So, the top of the stack was Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and you okay over there?
I'm sorry, I just can't take anything Buffy the Vampire Slayer related seriously.
That's hurtful in so many ways.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm like, that actually killed me a little bit.
Oh,
I love Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I'll give you
why I'm so depressed. So, we've got written by Jordi Belair, and then artist Dan Mora, obviously was created by Joss Whedon. So, I had to ask, because I'm tainted. I'm tainted goods. I have seen every Buffy the Vampire Slayer video, every episode of the TV show. It's my mom and I's, like, thing. It's what we did. We watched them all together.
Aww.
So I've seen every episode. I don't know what this is, and I'm upset about it.
Yeah.
No.
It was really boring, and I'm like, okay, my tainted goods, or is this boring? I need another opinion.
Right. I've read it and I was like, wow, this book is leaning hard on the artwork because the storytelling just ain't working. Because it's like a modern retelling of the exact story from the TV show.
And that's the thing is like everybody's introduction sucked.
Yeah.
Like really badly. Like I hate being this person, but I go back to the, you know, 90s show and how she was introduced as a, you know, preppy little 15-year-old, 16-year-old girl who walks into a high school.
Yeah.
That's a lot more entertaining.
Yeah.
This was, I'm bored at work and I save people walking out of my fast food restaurant. Yeah. And now they know what I do. It's
yeah.
Like in the TV show, their friend their friend gets kidnapped by a vampire and then betrays them because he's now evil. Like, it was a lot more intricate.
I feel like what they attempted to do was, like, they went too hard in the fan service and didn't let the story breathe. So it's like,
see, that's the other
let's introduce everybody in issue number one.
See, even that, though, because they threw, there's a character in there and I didn't recognize who it was until they said her name, Anya. She mm-hmm. doesn't show up for, like, 4 or 5 yeah. seasons.
So don't they introduce, the blonde vampire, too.
No, it's not her.
No, male. Spike? Is he introduced in this?
No, he's not.
Who is it?
The there's, you get Giles, Buffy, Xander, Willow, and then you get Anya.
Okay.
Who, I don't really understand, that was like a weird pick, because Spike shows up in season 2, she shows up in like 4. Mm. So I don't really know where they're going, and I'm really confused with their choices.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to keep reading it, but please don't ruin my day. It already was ruined once.
Yeah, that's funny.
Glutton for punishment over there, Kat.
I love Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I'm not going to lie. This might kill me.
Cass is there shriveled up and find her dead body with a Buffy the Vampire
it's
Slayer
It's also
issue.
Boom Studio, so I'm like extra hurt.
Right. Boom does really great adaptations. So.
Yeah, so I'm like super hurt right now.
Gotcha. All right, well, my top of the stack was Guardians of the Galaxy number 1, written by Donny Cates with art by Jeff Shaw, his
frequent
collaborator.
Oh my God,
Donny
Cates wrote that? What am I, dumb?
Yeah, that was the whole reason I went for this, is because right now I'm not sure I want anybody else handling Cosmic Ghost Rider besides Cates, because I think they're going to go too Deadpool-y with the character.
I could see that.
So it's nice to have the character's creator be involved in the book. But this whole the whole book centers around Thanos' last will and testament, and it's really, like, there's funny moments, but the book itself is actually kind of dark in what it's portraying. We get to see the Black Order. We get an angsty Groot that is so pissed about the Guardians falling apart that he's shaved spikes and, like, has turned himself into a punk rocker version of Groot because he's, like, really just... He's lamenting and he's sad and he's emo Groot and he. So his relationship with Peter Quill, who just wants to get trashed in nowhere, is kind of awesome.
Teenage Groot, still one of the best characters from Endgame. Yeah, Infinity Wars.
Absolutely.
I'm Groot.
Whoa. Yeah. Well, basically, it's the MacGuffin is Thanos' body trying to figure out the Black Order is attempting to steal it and. Nowhere is nowhere. It's missing. And yeah, there's like, it's a lot of, it's chaotic. It is a great jumping on point. It's Peter Quill doing what he does best, which is trying to save the misfits, and Cosmic Ghost Rider wanting no part of it, but just sort of being thrown into the fray of it all. And yeah.
Okay, because Endgame, it's Frank Castle. Frank Castle doesn't want to be around anybody.
Exactly. And he's kind of lamenting the fact that he's still alive. He really shouldn't exist, but they kicked him out of Valhalla. So it's like, yeah.
Just like standing there, son of a bitch, come on.
But this is what I want from a story where it has like a big, big MacGuffin. Like there's a big concept behind all of this. So the story is really driven forward by this idea, and the main idea, I'm just going to spoil this, is that Thanos basically implanted his consciousness into somebody that he's been in contact with over the few years, but he's not going to say who, so he can basically laugh in the afterlife as everybody's killing each other trying to figure out who exactly is going to be the new Thanos. So
interesting.
Yeah, well, it's good stuff.
Yeah,
sounds about right.
Yeah, and if you've never experienced Jeff Shaw's artwork too, it's pretty incredible. So
I have not.
Yeah,
great creative team, great book.
Great creative team, great book. Nice. All right, well, we'll move on to some news. There's been a lot of like TV and movie news over the past couple of days. She-Ra season 2 officially will be dropping in April on Netflix. I haven't finished season 1, but I've enjoyed what I've watched.
Nice.
So that seems good. Birds of Prey, there was a screen test teaser trailer ? And just some, you know, cropped out photos. And really, it was a costume test, so don't be beholden to these things. But I don't know. What were you guys' opinions? Did you get excited by this?
All it made me think was a 1960s Go-Go Club when I saw Harley Quinn in her, like, jacket.
her feather jacket-ish.
Yeah.
All I've learned from the Titans teaser trailers is that I shouldn't judge anything anymore ever based on teaser trailers. So my opinion is that I'm completely neutral on it.
That's funny. I actually really liked this, and I liked it because it was Warner Brothers and DC getting ahead of, like, leaked photos from the set. They were just like, hey, we're testing out costumes. These are kind of the looks we're thinking about for these characters.
Cool.
It's these are the people you're going to see on screen. And
you didn't really, honestly, you have to have someone, like, you have to pull the video out and stop it. You don't really get, I honestly, I have to watch it another 19 times to see everyone.
I think just looking at the screenshots that people have clipped out is really a good thing. You get to see Black Canary for the first time doing her, the musician angle. So, like, which is sort of interweaved through her history as a character. She had a short run series that she was like a rock star. And
that's who that was. Okay, yeah. Cool.
And then we have Huntress. We see Black Mask without the black mask on, and I'm kind of worried.
Who is Black Mask without the black mask?
Right, mask? Unless he's going to pull off the Ewan McGregor face at some point and have the black mask underneath it. That'd be dope. Because I think it would be really hard to, like, to cast Ewan McGregor in such a big role and not actually show Ewan McGregor. You know,
Fair. Which is really funny, because I'm like, look, it's Obi-Wan, wait a minute.
Right? And then Zaz in the image. We don't see the scars, but they would be really cool, like, in the movie, is if he, like, takes off his shirt and then you see all of the people that he's killed and he's just kept it all neck down.
So I mean, it might even be a beginning, like, for him, so you might just start seeing him add.
I want in process, because I want him to look like shit. Like, I want it to be, like, this terrifying serial killer, and you see his body and you realize this is all the people that he's killed before.
Like,
and
Killmonger style?
Yes.
From where there's just a scene where he just, like, takes off his shirt.
Exactly. Well, it would be really... Then this is going way into speculation territory. But if he's got somebody, like, dead to rights, like, strapped to a table, and he's, like, preparing to kill them, and he takes off his shirt, and he talks about the scars, and that each one represents somebody he's killed, and he turns around, and it's, like, it's almost like you can't even see his normal skin, but he keeps it all covered, so he keeps it where just a normal outfit would keep it all covered.
Run out of space,
but... Yeah. And that's when I'll start putting it on his face. But now, I think it would be a really scary character to think of, like, he pulls it off and he goes, oh my god, he's killed hundreds of people.
Or even, like, if you got just, like, a behind shot of him, like, standing up out of, like, the bathtub or something.
Oh, yeah.
So you could get, like, his, like, legs, too, in it, all, like, something like that, you know?
That would be cool. That would be really cool. Yeah. Like, just the have the myth match up with the scars.
Yeah,
because I'm 10, his butt's got scars.
Yeah, no, that would be insane.
That would be, does.
That would be absolutely insane, you know.
So, just like the only things that are clean are his hands and his face.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. Like, yeah, you don't want to see him turn around because you don't want to see how many scars he has.
Oh God, yeah. Anyway, moving on from that. So Patty Jenkins has dropped that she has her ideas for the end of the Wonder Woman trilogy, even though Wonder Woman 1984 hasn't even dropped yet.
It's gonna be a trilogy. Is she, like, for sure not gonna do a fourth one?
We're in the trilogy paradigm. Okay. But she has an idea for Wonder Woman 3.
Yeah,
she's already plotted that out.
Well, when you said trilogy, I was like, oh, so is she just gonna stop because she's just tentatively been like, oh, there's gonna be a third one. And second one.
I don't know. We're sort of past the era of, like, number fours. You know, there's not too many movies
that go to that level.
They get rebooted before they hit a fourth. So
that's super true. Because they stopped Iron Man at Iron Man 3.
Mm-hmm. Spider Man.
Thor Ragnarok is technically the third Thor.
Yeah. So we'll be seeing if there's a fourth one of that.
Yeah.
I guess the Avengers movies technically will be seeing the fourth one.
I mean, but, like, if she wants to keep doing
that,
the movies,
the third one's called Infinity Gauntlet, not Avengers 3. So
Yeah.
I mean, but if she wants to keep making the movies and they're still, like, as successful as the first one, then DC is not gonna bat an eye.
Honestly, after a third film, I'd be willing to see them revisit the Justice League idea, because hopefully they'll have more individual stories under their
That would be better, especially I could see her totally show running the new Justice League movie too, like after number three.
That would be really cool.
And then do, like, a Wonder Woman centric story. or something.
Oh, yeah, you could totally do something.
Oh,
like,
I'd be game if they just did a Trinity.
Yeah, that would be cool, too.
That would be with the new... the new Batman will be.
Right, we'll be talking about that here in just a second, actually. Right. I think this is a really interesting move by Patty Jenkins, too, because it almost, like, locks Warner Brothers out. Like, because if 2 is as successful as we assume as it will be, how do you not hire her back to do the third when she's already publicly, like, thrown it into the ether that's like, oh, yeah, I have an idea for the third film.
Yeah, it's exactly. Like, you
know. She's just standing in front of a chessboard.
Right.
Like, absolutely.
She's
not even
smart.
Looking, texting.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, she just tweets. She just, like, sends out the tweet, Wonder Woman 3 will be in contemporary times, and then moves her queen closer to the other side.
Pretty awesome.
It's all falling into my trap.
that's freaking great.
Yeah.
She must love doing this too, though, because these are big productions, so it's sort of locking her out from opportunities to do other films.
Yeah.
So, you know, she can maybe sneak in an indie film or two in between these, but, you know, if she's really gung-ho, then this is her career for the next few years.
Oh, because yeah, she is working on a mini-series, I believe, currently.
Oh, cool.
I forget which team. I was actually just listening to an interview with her a couple days ago, and they were talking specifically about, like, the fact that she doesn't really have that many movies, and they're all, like, super far in between, and she was specifically like, yeah, I don't do projects that I'm not excited about. Like, I just don't do that. Like, I've never done that. Like, it's hurt my career for sure.
Yeah. But at the same time, there is the positive to that is her pedigree is really strong. Like, because of the stuff that she does, she cares
like,
about.
Like, M. Night Shyamalan, where you're like, is this one going to be bad or good?
Yeah. Or like Michael Bay, where you just make a million movies every year. And
there's like five in there. They're like, those are really good movies. Two of them are Bad Boys.
Yeah.
It's like... But by the way, I do like me some Bad Boys and Bad Boys. I'm going to say that. So.
That's totally fine. That's understandable. Yeah, but like, but everyone's like, look at all these bad Michael Bay movies, but I've never heard of a bad Patty Jenkins property.
So. All right. So we hinted at before the Trinity idea. So Affleck is officially out as Batman. Mm-hmm. He posted a tweet in support of Matt Reeves' film, which has a date of, I believe, June 15th, 2021.
Yep.
And he has said, Matt Reeves has said publicly that he's looking for a younger Batman, and he's going to focus on a detective story, and he mentioned Rogues Gallery. So we're looking at several Batman villains, which leads me into the wild
That's
speculation.
Like Riddler. Who's Rogues Gallery for him?
Rogues Gallery is everything for him. I think that statement means that we're going to see multiple villains. So there are two stories in my mind that you kind of go to and loosely adapt. And one is the Arkham Asylum first game. You have a younger Batman who's probably like 3 to 5 years into his run. We don't do an origin story. Nobody needs to see that. I mean, if I see another pearl drop, I'm going to freaking throw up in the theater. I'm so done. We know Batman's origin story. We've known it for 40 years. The general populace at this point.
Get over your dead parents already.
Right? Jesus.
Your parents died too.
And the other story is Hush. You do a story of...
Hush would be creepy.
Hush would be creepy. And it gives you the opportunity to utilize... Hush is about a new character who sort of attacks Batman from all angles and uses manipulation from his past to
Doesn't he attack Bruce Wayne?
He attacks both. He knows Bruce is Batman, and it's a really like it's
know
really
too
cool.
I don't know much about Hush either. I just know what he does.
Hush is the book that represents the modern Batman. Like that was the full tonal shift from Batman. There's Batman before Hush, and then there's Batman after Hush.
So that was like an 80s run?
No, Hush was 2002.
Yeah, I know that Hush was a lot earlier than that. But yeah, basically, he's a surgeon, isn't he?
Yeah, and I guess spoilers for something that was released 15 plus years ago.
Yeah, if you don't already know, basically he kills a bunch of people and uses grafts from their face to make Bruce Wayne's face. So making that, and the worst part, I think in Arkham City, spoilers for a game that's been out for God knows how long, you end up tailing him. And at the end of it, he takes off the bandages.
And he looks like Bruce Wayne.
And he has stitches in his face, but he looks exactly like... It's fucking horrifying. Yeah, I would be game. If that was rated R, I'll be there.
He was Bruce Wayne's childhood friend, yep. And he attacks him in adulthood.
Yep. Oh,
ew, yeesh. Yeah, but yeah. I mean, I love everything that I'm hearing. I don't necessarily need a Batman who's 30. I would be okay with somebody 35 to 40 years old playing Batman and, you know, having a younger look. I've put this out in the ether. This would be my dream casting as Oscar Isaac. I think that he would be Poe Dameron
from Star Wars. Yep. Nice.
Yeah. I think he'd be fantastic as Batman. Plus, a Latino Batman. Of course, that'd be great.
See, in the back of my mind, I'm like, you gotta do something that's super hot. I don't think he's good looking. That's just my thing.
What? Okay. Yeah, whatever. Teach his own. But there's more Batman news. Apparently, there's Batman Beyond Into the Batverse? Apparently, Warner Brothers is in development on a Batman Beyond animated film that is set to be their answer to Into the Spider-Verse. Now, I think what we're looking at there is not a multiple Batmans from multiple different dimensions, but something done in a CG style that represents comic books and
I figured it'd totally be more interesting. Time travel based than anything.
I don't think we'd even do that. I think it's just more about saying just that the tone and like the visual style.
Yeah, because I mean, Batman Beyond was a very style highly stylized show, and so that would be an interesting point if they just like took those ideas and just
ran with it.
Yeah.
And using the future tech gives you so much visual development and like so many
Michael
like
Keaton the neon. Michael Keaton isn't the voice of older Bruce Wayne. I'm gonna be upset.
I actually, you know who my pick for older Bruce Wayne is? Is Will Friedle, the original voice of Terry McGinnis, because he said that he wants to be involved in the project.
Oh,
and that would be really cool. Like,
might actually win me over on that one.
Have him be able to voice Bruce Wayne. Although Keaton, that's a pretty great choice.
Right?
Yeah, it is a pretty great choice.
Or if somehow they got I don't know, going the opposite way, if they got Jack Nicholson to do it as the other way.
That's awesome. But I mean, this excites me. I love Batman Beyond and the idea. And I'm into the Spider-Verse as a masterpiece. So if we see movies attempting to utilize that style or something similar, obviously it's not going to be the exact same thing, but
you can't.
And how well it paid off, not only the fact that it is a masterpiece of a movie, but the fact that it's like now kind of objectively considered so by the Academy.
Right, exactly.
You know, like people are like, it's a good movie, and someone's like, are you sure? And you're like, well, it has 28 awards.
Right, exactly. Like it's like, it's won every best animation category it's been in.
Which is all of them.
Yeah, exactly. So,
But the fact that it was, objectively successful,
mm-hmm.
Too, you know, it made money, it, won awards, so now, I'm excited.
Well, and I think something that they could take the playbook from Into the Spider-Verse is introducing a new character in that lead role. You know, having a new person be Batman, and, this is the great way to do it, is you can tell your Bruce Wayne story in the Matt Reeves universe, but then you tell your Terry McGinnis story. You introduce somebody completely new. And Warner Brothers had publicly said that they're looking for an Asian voice actor to play Terry.
Really? Interesting. Yeah.
Which would be cool. Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
Multicultural, that's always, good too.
I mean, voice acting is one of those things where it's like, you just specifically cast for your voice. Look, doesn't matter at all.
That was kind of the point I was going to go to. Bing Rhames made a good bet.
Well, I think it's the point, maybe they're making Terry McGinnis an Asian American character, and it would be pretty racially insensitive to cast a white actor to voice a...
Oh, so they're actually going to, render him as such as well? Okay, yeah. I was like, if they're just keeping Batman white, then, it really doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, speaking of moving on to maybe award something stuff? More about Asian voice actors.
Let's go. We'll jump right into the Invincible casting. What?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we got, do we have the list? It's Steven Yeun.
What is it? So,
Invincible. Oh, and The Invincible is going to be an animated TV series on Amazon. They're looking at 1 hour episodes, which is fantastic because
they're all completely animated. Like, it's not CGI, it's 2D. Actual TV animation.
I saw something about the showrunners too, and they were from, the Ultimate Spider-Man show, and there was another animated production that the showrunners are from, so it's like, it's really good stuff. But yeah, the cast, we have Steven Yeun as Mark Grayson / Invincible, J.K. Simmons as Omni-Man.
Yeah, what?
And that's like, it's huge casting. Zazie Beetz, Mark Hamill, Gillian Jacobs, like, the cast is nuts.
Sandra Oh. Seth Rogen.
I don't know. What? I'm really excited. Invincible, I've said this several times, is my favorite comic book of all time. So seeing it being adapted as animation is really exciting for me. And then this is a star-studded cast.
Yeah, so. that's multiple like
Oscar winners.
Is J.K. Simmons, does he have an Oscar? Do you know?
I thought he won recently for Best Supporting Actor.
Okay, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he's such a seasoned.
I know he got nominated for Whiplash, but
he's such a seasoned vet too, and he has a great voice. I'm excited to see him do it.
Well, Steven Yeun for a long time was my dream casting for Nightwing. So seeing him play a different Grayson is pretty awesome to me.
Oh,
so I thought that would be great. So.
Yeah. He would be a great Nightwing, too.
Right? And that's like, the Invincible character has kind of that joie de vivre that you would expect, like, that sort of Nightwing to be that way.
Like, the almost semi-arrogance.
Yeah! And it's like,
not really.
And everybody kind of likes him, like, regardless of who they are.
No one picked him. I couldn't think of who the hell this was. I was like, dude, he worked on The Walking Dead.
Yeah,
he makes sense.
Steven Yeun, yeah. He's Glenn from The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Because now Glenn is also dead, and once again, if you don't know that, I don't know how to help you.
Right?
Because he went on to do objectively better shows,
which is hilarious though too. He's also goes from one Robert Kirkman show to another Robert Kirkman show.
Does Robert Kirkman work on The Walking Dead too?
Robert Kirkman created The Walking Dead.
Oh, he created The Walking Dead, and he created Invincible too. That's pretty funny.
So yeah, that's kind of awesome. But I think my excitement level and my hype is really high for this.
Nice. I wonder if he's secretly a huge Robert Kirkman fan.
Maybe Robert Kirkman's just a huge fan of him and is like, no, you're in my stuff.
Maybe.
Period.
What if they both come to each other too at the same time? Like, they both
that would
just
be
like,
awesome. I want to be in your stuff.
Yeah.
Stupid as it sounds, I kind of want Robert Kirkman to be the comic book dude. Invincible, you know,
That would be so good, actually. All right, we're kind of hanging on this one a little long. That's okay. So Black Panther has won the SAG Award for Best Ensemble, which is essentially their Best Picture Award.
Yeah.
Black Panther is continuing its rise and its buzz for the Oscars. You had some other news related to Black Panther as well, right?
Yeah, well, not only did it win the SAG for this week, the first week in February, I think it's the first week in February, AMC theaters will be doing 2 showings a day of Black Panther for free in honor of the 1 year anniversary of Black Panther and B, Black History Month again.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. So they're doing free showings. Y'all can get down to your local AMCs if you do so desire and watch Black Panther on the big screen again for $0. And on top of that, Disney, since they partnered up with AMC to do this promotional thing, Disney is actually donating $1.5 million to the United Negro College Fund, or the UNFC, which is just a great foundation in general. They do some great work. So that's just
awesome.
Good stuff. Just, you know, you look around and the world's kind of going crazy sometimes, but you know, every now and then there's bright rays of hope that shine through, and free movies and like donations to charity, like that's just good. This is good things all around.
Black Panther for Best Picture, right?
yes. I would love to see that.
It'd be interesting. We do have some other bits of news, but I'm actually going to unfortunately pass by them. I want us to get into this discussion topic because we are going a little long for time. So. Events seem to be a big driving force in the comic book industry, especially as of late, like I would say as of late being the past 10 years or so. And I think there's multiple sides to this. You know, it's great to see characters all together, but is this something that's a negative for the industry? Are we is it too event driven? Is it not enough to let characters breathe? And I'm specifically talking about the big two. We're looking at DC and Marvel, and I don't know if it's a paradigm that's working when most people talk about their favorite books, or at least most people in our space. Let's talk about Fort Collins, Colorado. We'll talk about Image Comics or, you know, Boom Studios having their favorite books. So what are your guys' thoughts on this? Kat, do you have any, like, specific ideas?
My biggest thing is like, it hits a point where I can understand events, because they get to a point where they're like, well, what do we do now? I feel like this character's really stale. And they have a difference between them and Image, which is they're using the same heroes that have been around for Superman 80 years.
Yeah.
So I don't think you need to have one every 5 years, necessarily.
Oh, you're being generous.
Yeah.
Like, every 5 years?
They're almost 1 to 2 years for Marvel and DC.
Marvel's worse about it than DC, DC's been a little bit shitty about it lately, too. But I don't dislike them. Marvel agitates me because the way that they do their events is it's across 19 different books in order to get the story.
Right.
Which, for me, I'm like, I don't want to buy all these books. I don't even read X-Men, and you're making me buy it just to read it.
Right. I have a positive to say. I've read Age of X-Men number one. Age of X-Men Alpha, which is the beginning story of the Age of X-Men. And what they did nicely was they interwove elements of the offshoot stories into this one issue. So it gave you like a taste. It's like, hey, if you want to read about this character, this element of the story, this is the book you pick up. So it kind of was like, rather than saying you need all of it, was here's a little primer on these things. But do we need another X-Men event when we just had X-Men Blue, Gold, and Red all launch?
Red, I mean, that was Black. I feel like Magenta was going to start showing up soon. I was really starting to get worried.
Every one of these titles got canceled, so they could do Uncanny X-Men that leads into the Age of X, or Age of X-Men. And it's like, well, what happened to you had a good thing going? Let's tell some new stories. It seems like this event, leading into this event, we've now abandoned what was working ostensibly and done something completely different.
Which, I'm never offended to an idea like that. I just have, I hate being this way because I'm going to read them, but, like, my example right now is the only thing I can think of where I have to go across multiple comics is the Thor event that's going to happen, War of the Realms.
Right.
It's 8 different comics.
Right.
3 different series or 4?
I think 3, but we're seeing characters like Daredevil cropping up in this, so we're, like, getting way out of the Asgardian realm.
Yeah, so
Squirrel Girl. Squirrel Girl. Crosses over with
Even though
she's biffles with Loki.
And this is, it's cool. Hey, do you want to see Thor interacting with Squirrel Girl? Yeah, I do. I do want to see that, but do I need 19 comic books to read
just
that?
To get to that?
Yeah. It's like, I would rather read the 5 comics or the 6 comics that is War of the Realms, and then know that the status quo is going to change for those other books after the fact.
I mean, I will say they did a somewhat decent job with Spider-Geddon. You didn't need to read all the outside books, but it would have been like...
And it was small.
Yes.
Spider-Geddon was not a gigantic story that was
universe-wide. Because I know that Secret Empire pissed off a bunch of people, and it was a shit ton.
Secret Empire ruined Champions, which I will not forgive. Like, we got into this event, and I'm like, wait a minute, what was happening with the Champions actually doing their own stuff? So, Patrick, you're a little bit on the pro side of the notes.
Well, I totally agree with you guys, and I don't like it when they're just kind of lazily slapped together, and you can kind of tell when events are just to get you to buy more books. But we were talking about this earlier, and I started thinking about I listen to a lot of rap music, and essentially what you can like consider this in is like a featuring. So like this would be like, you know, this is like Squirrel Girl featuring Thor, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like if you're a Thor fan and you go pick up the Squirrel Girl comic just to get the Thorverse on it, then you might end up liking Squirrel Girl, actually. You know, it's like, I've discovered a lot of rappers just because I'm like, oh, Kendrick Lamar did a verse on, Rhapsody's song. Like, who's Rhapsody? And then I go and listen to her music, and I'm like, oh, she's amazing because Kendrick Lamar was on there, and I explicitly just listened to it for that. But then, also on the other hand, a lot of times is like, oh, Kendrick Lamar does a verse on this song, I'll go listen to it. And then I'm like, his verse is amazing because I always love Kendrick Lamar, but it's like, oh, he does a verse on like MGK, I'm like, oh, that's bad, or something like that. Just like, oh, no, that person is bad. I listened to the song, I found out that I don't like that person,
right.
I still like Kendrick Lamar. So,
see, I think the difference with comics versus that analogy, which I actually quite like, is the idea that Kendrick Lamar's career doesn't stop.
Yeah.
When he makes that feature in somebody else's song.
It also doesn't necessarily reset his career. I think that's a better way to
say it. No, but like, you put Thor, let's say we're going to keep using this thing, yeah. Thor in the Squirrel Girl comic. Now we have an issue of Squirrel Girl that doesn't pertain to what was happening in the story.
Yep.
So Squirrel Girl now stops so that Thor can be featured in this, as opposed to being a continuation of what was happening.
Not necessarily either, because like, as long as you have a good writer to put it in there effectively, then you can do it well. Like, that's why, like, especially on a lot of people, like, if you, like, Dr. Dre, like, produces so many good people because, like, everybody wants to step up their game when they're working with him, you know? You're like, oh, crap, I'm getting produced by Dre. Like, I have to make this great. I have to do this good. And so you go on to his thing and, like, you do well. So it's, yeah. Like, you know,
I guess the hardest part is like, what, with DC, whenever they have giant events, it's usually a universe reset.
Right.
That's
Marvel
true.
Just annihilates me.
They annihilate you with the number of titles that they put out.
So they each have their bad things, but at the same time, like I said, it's Image and Boom are harder to... Power Rangers, I'll see what happens with that, but like, with Image and Boom, they have comics, yeah, they've been doing them, some of them for forever, and I'm like... Good for you. I don't know how you've lasted so long on one character. You must be super passionate about it, but...
But also, a cool thing, and I totally agree with everything you're saying, too, but, like a cool thing is that Marvel and DC are the only entities so far in, like, history that have been able to do something like a crossover. Like, there's no other, like, publishing companies... in general, just ever, that have an interconnected world like this, that they would be able to do it. I mean, Image tried it once, and that just flopped.
I don't think the final issue is ever released for that.
Really?
I'm legitimately, they. I can't even remember what the crossover was called. Invincible did it in its own.
Yeah.
It made its own, like, crossover with characters that exist in the Invincible universe.
Yep.
Speaking of that, but yeah, you're right. It's not like a line.
But then
thing.
It's like a. But then that goes back to Kat, like, talking about having to buy like 17 different issues in 1 month just to get like one storyline. And but then, like, could you call that an event if it's still the same like comic going up, or is that just a run that gets really crazy?
I don't know, because it's dependent on how you define that. It was more like it was billed as an event as we were reading it in individual issues. Like, it was. Moving towards the, I forgot what the event was even called. Anyway,
what are you talking about
the Mark Graysons when like when the Invincibles from other universes
appear. But it's one of those things of I understand what happens, but I think both of them need to take a look at things and try and figure out how to do something new. Like, every event that DC does doesn't need to be a universe reset. And Marvel doesn't need to sell me 30 comics in a month for one event.
Yeah.
And this, I wanted to bounce back to two things that you had said. One was that you mentioned Mighty Morphin or the Power Rangers stuff. And I think that Shattered Grid for me was like the perfect, like, this is how you do a crossover event between two books and make it important. And it changed both the directions of both books afterward without alienating anything. It was like, it was centered around a character that was so important to the mythology, it was worthwhile. And like, the few specials they did, they had, what, two that were not actually in the main core books? They had like the annual and then the Shattered Grid special.
Something like that. But even the Shattered Grid special had to do with it, so...
Yeah, like, all of it was so condensed and so perfectly set. And the other example that I was thinking about was DC Rebirth. So when Rebirth happened, there was one issue that was Rebirth. That was your crossover. That was where the genesis of the event occurred. And then all of a sudden, all of the books themselves were this new status quo. like, there wasn't a major, like, line of stories that led into Rebirth. It was just like, here's Rebirth, this is the new universe, and for at least one full year, DC thrived off of Rebirth without having to do a billion crossovers. Like, this was all interesting stories. It took continuity that was necessary and made something great out of it. And now we're getting the events for DC and the whole universe, at least for me, as somebody who's been enriched in DC culture for such a long time, it's so dark, it's not necessarily entertaining. It's like I'm reading stuff because I'm fans of the characters more than the fact that I'm fans of what's actually happening in the books.
Yeah.
You like the featuring verses.
Yeah.
You don't really like the full song proper.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know?
So it's
that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, I mean, I get that with Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, but Mighty Morphin Power Rangers has only existed in the comic right now, like with Boom, for how long though?
It's been 3-4 years?
Yeah, so not super long in comparison. So, but you know, you're right. They did it extremely well, and they made... The thing is what I think the whole point of that event was to make it two different books.
Yeah.
Not the later version of...
Right,
of this one. This one now is what you want if you want the OG cast, and this is what you want if you want something new and different.
And that's important. I'm like, you use the event as an actual mechanism for the status quo. Like, it's actually changing things. I think Marvel last year... out of Secret Empire, they drove into the Marvel Legacy, like the new age of the Marvel heroes. And post Legacy, Marvel has done a great job. We couldn't come up with really the event that happened in 2018, other than Spider-Geddon, which was very small and was very much towards the end of the year.
Yeah, I think grand total for all of them, if you include their side stories, it was like. And it was over a span of how many months, too?
Yeah.
I think it was a span of actually more than that.
There's 10 main issues, because it was Edge of Spider-Geddon and Spider-Geddon.
Yeah, so 10 of those, and then there was about 3 apiece for 3 different stories for an extra 9, and then one other random one.
And most of it was tangential. Like, most of it was unnecessary to the main story itself.
Well, I did hear you guys talking, because Marvel is gearing up for the, what is it?
War of the Realms.
Yes. And I heard both of you, or at least Matt, you specifically, kind of excitedly talking about where it could go. Like, and I think the main part is because they have a good creator heading it. Jason Aaron is basically in charge of this event, and he's an amazing writer. He's great, so it's like...
He's been entrenched in the specific... in Asgard and these characters now for, 5 years plus?
A long time. Long time.
So this is a culmination event.
I will say I think DC is learning, though, because now you have Tom King, who's been on Batman for how long? He's being screwed for other purposes, and for some reason, DC hasn't learned, hey, maybe we should make Batman a monthly like we've done with Superman. Look how well Brian Michael Bendis is doing on both of them.
Right.
But, you know, it's like, sort of to continue my metaphor from before, you know, Jason Aaron is a great musician. He is objectively a great rapper.
Right.
And so, like, you know that you're going to listen to his whole album. Like, and just maybe on a couple tracks, you'll find somebody that you also enjoy that you can then go pick up their books. But you might not find anybody.
My problem is, why are there 40 songs on the album? So, like, a tight 15 featuring a couple of different artists?
No,
Does Marvel have a lot of bi-weekly issues?
No.
Yes.
Yes, they do.
Amazing Spider-Man is bi-weekly.
I'm not on any of them.
A lot of their core books are bi-weekly right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Like Spider-Man and the X-Men and...
X-Men was weekly right now. trying to think.
But the thing is with the event that they did with X-Men, it was 10 issues in 10 weeks, which I'm like...
Yeah, like, how do you as...
My wallet was like,
right.
No!
And why make the story, like, comic book fans are used to waiting months.
Oh, yeah!
You know, a month.
It is serialized storytelling. That's, like, part of the joy.
I don't know anymore if that'll quote-unquote fly, because you've got such a loud minority, it causes problems for the silent majority.
Yeah.
Which minority specifically?
The ones who can't fucking handle 10 waiting an extra month for a comic to go out.
Yeah.
For anything to come out.
I need my X-Men now!
Basically. And that's usually what ruins it for a lot of people, because it looks to them like, oh my god, everybody's so angry that we haven't come out with this. Oh, we've got to get it out.
Yeah, like, so, quickly. I don't even care. Don't worry about editing it. Don't worry about anything. Just throw it out.
So we're running tight on time, and I really want to get out my genesis for this discussion. What made me think about this was, I think that DC is in an event right now.
I think so too.
I don't think it's being advertised. I think we have an event that is occurring. I think there are books in multiple timelines about this event. I think that DC has backdoored an event without doing any advertising that is tying multiple things together, spanning Justice League's dealing with the Source Wall to the events of Heroes in Crisis leading into the universe that exists in Doomsday Clock to ending and giving our new status quo in Wonder Comics being speared by Bendis. Because I do not believe Young Justice is in the current timeline that we're in. I think Young Justice is way in the future.
Well, I think whatever happens in the current event, which is Heroes in Crisis and Doomsday Clock,
it's bigger than that.
But
that
makes sense. I was going to say
Tim Drake disappeared in Detective Comics, and he looks much younger than the Tim Drake that disappeared.
But like, whatever's happening in that, I'm pretty sure, and I think we've discussed this before, that the DC universe is going to a hard reset, and then what we're seeing, at least in Young Justice right now, and then Wonder Comics, is the new universe already in motion.
Which, if you're going to do an event, I'm liking this. Like, this is something interesting because it's a paradigm break. We're not being forced to read all of these different titles because we don't know that they're part of the event. You're just kind of like, you're reading what you're reading and feeling a difference in tone.
Even with some of them, you don't necessarily, I don't think they need that either. They're just hiding. They're like, if you don't want to read this, that's fine. It's still going to come too, but it's fine.
I read the Justice League annual and went, oh shit, this is huge. Like, what is happening
with the Justice League annual? Damn it!
The Justice League annual actually deals with the mending of the Source Wall, and I'm sorry, I'm going to spoil. They reveal what I think is the big bad. I think the big bad has been revealed for what this event is, for what will actually reset the universe post Doomsday Clock. Because I think Heroes in Crisis definitely gets us into the negative zone of superheroes. That Doomsday Clock is that story. Like, Doomsday Clock is, and the end of Doomsday Clock may be a confrontation between two characters, one that's not really part of the DC Universe in Dr. Manhattan, and then this character who was introduced in,
if you hear the door close, it's just me walking out trying to go to Justice League Annual.
Because I feel like they are going for a universe reset, or at least it seems that we're going that way, and through conversations that I've had with other comic book fans, it seems like they're attempting, even bigger than Rebirth, is combining everything. They're Grant Morrison
in this
and making it all canon.
Everything together. Oh, brain bleed.
Well, you say, oh god, no, and I'm like, yes, let's not worry about like which timeline stuff is from. Make it all true. Make it all part of the story that we all
Oh no, that's loved. Not a brain bleed in like the oh no, it's that that's not
it's just it's too
it's
much.
It's not a negative thing, it's just like, oh shit. No, not Grant Morrison, no. Well, I love you so much, but you hurt me.
Well, I mean, Brian Michael Bendis is a great musician. If this is his album that we're in the middle of right now,
I don't really know because
it's like we were talking about with Jason Aaron, like we're excited for this event because we know he's going to do it well.
Right,
but we're also
his story that explains Leviathan.
Yeah,
but then we're also excited for this potential event because it's being spearheaded by Bendis because he's such a great creator.
I think it is a two man band.
I think so.
I think Bendis and Scott Snyder.
Yeah, you think yes. It's a duo?
You don't think it's their outcast company?
Oh, maybe it's a classic music trio.
I'm starting to think
trio.
These books, like Heroes in Crisis, Doomsday Clock, Superman, the Wonder Comics, I think they're all interacting.
Yep.
Grant Morrison, I wish you would show up.
I also think the Green Lantern story that we're getting in the main title, Green Lantern, is way farther ahead.
Really?
I think it is post what is happening in this event.
I wonder if it was like the three of them, and they're like, okay, Grant Morrison, how do you Grant Morrison things?
Right. And they're using Tom King as the vehicle for the small stories.
Yes.
Like, he's not necessarily the spearhead of this. He's the guy that needs to write the psychological break.
Yep.
So, and if this is all true, and, you know, speculate responsibly, to quote Four Center podcast, but...
You're right.
Maybe this is it. And if this works and it gets us to a new, brighter DC, I'm all for it.
I mean, like, if Wonder Comics is going to be the essential, like, jumping-on point, yeah, the status quo, then it's going to be bright. It might give Marvel a run for, at least, especially from what we saw in Young Justice, it might give Marvel a run for its money for its younger reader audience.
Yeah.
Honestly, like you were saying, you think that...
Younger reader, and that's over here. Like, give me Wonder Comics.
He thinks that he's the orchestrator. I think this is three. They have to be working together with the certain things that keep popping up in certain comics.
Well, and there was a restructuring at DC that happened recently, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's a result of the way that this particular crew worked together.
Which even me personally, that's probably the best way that you can work out with such bigger industry comics like this is the ability for there to be the top three writers and they all somewhat work together because it makes it for a better
comic. And then you have things like Teen Titans, which I'm a huge fan of, that doesn't need to be part of this giant event. No. You know, it will have a status quo change, but maybe they can keep going with the story that they have and they don't have to worry about tying it into all of this. What, especially when you cross timelines, which they seem to be doing, is you don't have to worry about the books being there. They'll catch up.
Yeah.
Eventually the book will be at issue 42 and all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, that Superman is the Superman that we have now. Like, it is part of the greater universe.
No, and that makes complete sense. Because that's what I think. I think if the three of them are working together and talking through and what they're kind of doing in their books that is setting up the chess pieces, so to speak, they don't necessarily need to include everyone.
No. And I think that is my point about events. Events can exist and can change the status quo without having to have every single book on the shelves be affected by it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So just like, you know, have an event, have your main story or whatever, and then all the other books that you want to tie in anyway, just let the creators essentially like figure out their own tie-in. Like,
let them catch up.
Like,
well, even that, the hard part with that though is how Marvel's structured. I can see DC doing it much better because they're like, this might pertain to here, but it might not.
Yeah.
So I can, for DC, I can see that, but Marvel, like, no, everything pertains to everything at all times.
Yeah, exactly.
So that one, for them, that would be like a super hard status quo change for them and how they do things, which I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but the dude over there who's been bitching that he didn't get his comic a week ago because it got pushed back.
I think Spider-Geddon is a great paradigm. You don't need every single book to hit this, but the Spider-Man books are going to be affected, and that's how it's going to work.
I don't even think Amazing Spider-Man was affected, though.
No, it really wasn't. You're right. Amazing Spider-Man just did its story.
I think it was Spectacular Spider-Man is the one that was affected.
And that's it. You know, pick and choose. Don't interfere with the core books just to make the story work.
You know, you can make it work, and it has worked, and it's been great, but mostly it's just a little overwhelming, I think.
Cool.
All right, well, I think on that note...
That was a great conversation.
Yeah. But with that being said, let's all say bye there.
All right. Bye.